Welcome to episode 13 of A Legitimate Salvage, a podcast about The Expanse in which four friends and Doctor Who fans attempt to rewatch seasons 1 to 3 before the season 4 premieres on Amazon in December. Before we launch into the discussion, let's go around and introduce ourselves.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Katie Burt.
And I'm Warren Fry.
And so we're in it. We're in season 3. The final season before season 4.
This is going by really quick.
I know.
It is.
I was just saying, like, wow, we don't have that many episodes to record. And then I was like, that means there's going to be new episodes because we set it up this way.
A gift for ourselves. But
the problem with that is, like, I was talking to my new girlfriend, who is also pretty cheesed off. I didn't tell her about this podcast in the first place because she's a big Expanse fan. She doesn't know anybody else who is besides me.
A mark in
but
her
favor.
But
she also said, We're watching season 4 when it comes out, and I'm like, oh, but are we binging it? Because then I've got this podcast thing, and should I? Am I going to binge it anyway? And then we'll rewatch it after that? Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do what we are the masters of this podcast. We can do whatever we need to do.
That's true.
But it would be interesting to hear from our many listeners what their plans are in terms of watching the new season. Because this is the first opportunity to watch all of it at once as soon as it is launched.
I did see someone on Twitter saying that they wanted to start like a fan campaign to encourage Amazon not to release them all at once. And I was like, guys, we got the show back. Let's not like start.
Come on, nerds. Don't get uppity now.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually busy for me, that day.
Yeah. For me, it's when's it released? The 15th?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it is the 15th. Yeah. Or maybe it's the 12th. I can't remember.
Early December.
Probably not the 12th.
Or mid-December.
That's when England's having an election. But as of right now. But for me, I always watched them all binging anyway because I watched them, I might have torrented the first two seasons. but after that, when it hit Sci-Fi and then it went away. No, I watched it on Crave, the Canadian version of HBO Max here. I watched the first two seasons all in one go because I never watched it when it came out. And I don't even know if I could get it. And then the third season, I waited till it was done on Sci-Fi, and then it showed up on Amazon after a long bunch of screwing around, and I binged all that, too. So binging is kind of my natural way to go with The Expanse.
See, Katie and I watched it with my roommate who has small children. So we would our ability to line up all of our schedules is very difficult. So we watched it very slowly. Like, yeah. Sometimes much slower than it would have liked.
There were some long, painful waits between episodes, but it really helped us savor the episodes and the experience.
Yeah, I didn't do that at all. In fact, the Amazon way of doing things is like 2 seconds in, then bloop, off to the next episode. Like, no. Well, I guess so. Here we are.
And I did just double check. It is December 13th that the fourth season drops. Great. I'm sure everyone listening already knew that, probably. But
not us.
But December feels like decades away right now, so
November doesn't. It's 2 days from now.
That's true. Yeah. And you know, we're still in season 3. We're in it. What did you guys think of these two episodes generally? What were your hot takes?
I mean, they're not the barn burner that the last one and the first one were, but they wouldn't be. They're 2 and 3. They're still pretty substantial.
Yeah. I think they're solid episodes, but they're not. It's like, yeah, The Expanse is a great show. The ones that I think are less memorable as a whole, this is moving through, like, a lot of plots, kind of laying the groundwork for a lot of plots, I think. It's still great to watch, and there's some great lines, but it's not the previous two episodes were so good, yeah. I think.
But, I mean, that's a given if it's a premiere and the final episode.
Exactly.
So. It was not these episodes' fault that they came after that, like, double hitter.
Yeah. I was, if you're watching it the proper way, then you won't really notice that as much because you'll have a week between them. I was talking to an editor friend of mine who works on Joe Bob's Last Drive-In, and she was admonishing Netflix and creators on Netflix for the fact that they, like, think they have to pad everything out to 10 episodes. I specifically said, The Expanse doesn't do that. It just stuffs a million tons of story into every episode.
This is true. Speaking of which, let's head into our clever episode synopses.
Ah, yes.
So first we have IFF, which aired April 18th, 2018. Mao is on the Io research station checking out Strickland's evil progress. Strickland claims the children they are experimenting on, including May, are the key to controlling the protomolecule. And Mao is ghosting Aaron Wright without providing him the weapon he promised. On Earth, Secretary General Gillis brings in an old protest buddy, now pastor, Anna Volodova, to get some talking points. She's floating a space wrench in Aaron Wright's warmongering, though. Aaron Wright better have a good text encryption because he keeps getting messages about his failed attempt to assassinate Avasarala. Meanwhile, on Julie's Razorback, Bobby and Christian are just out of reach of the UN ship sent by Aaron Wright. But racing ships are a game for the young. Bobby can withstand the G-forces with the help of some Zoom juice. But
thank you.
But Christian may be having a stroke. Basically, they need a new plan fast, but not too fast. On the Rossi, Amos and Prax are building plant walls and talking Frankenstein until they get the distress call. Holden wants to keep flying because they're out of the heroic intervention business. Saving May is totally not heroic. But the team votes and Prax breaks the tie. The Rossi goes flipping in to save the day, and Bobby comes in carrying an unconscious Christian on board, our hero.
All right, Assured Destruction, April 25th, 2018. The gang's all together, but it's not going as smoothly as fans might have hoped. Christian is still unconscious, and Bobby isn't telling the Rossi crew anything, even if they did risk it, everything to rescue the duo. That's fine by Holden. Even when Christian wakes up and tells him she has information that could stop the war, Holden isn't interested in altering course to help get it to anyone. He's on a very specific mission to save May, and he doesn't need anybody on the ship who isn't on board with that plan. And yes, that includes Naomi, who is actively considering returning to Tycho. Meanwhile, Jules Pierre Meow hangs with May on Io, which gives them pause in this whole experimenting on kids thing, in air quotes. Katoa, May's friend from back on Ganymede, begins to exhibit the less cool side effects of the protomolecule. Admiral Souther is back, and he's just as morally upstanding as ever. He's got the whole Belladama thing going on, commanding an old clunky ship with glitchy electricals called the Agatha King. When the Agatha King is ordered to pick up the dropship with Katya on board, don't ask about poor Theo, and Admiral Nguyen, just as morally suspicious as ever, comes to the Agatha King to interrogate him. Souther gets rightfully suspicious. Faking an electrical failure with the help of his loyal crew, Souther gets a minute alone with Katya to hear the truth. Aaron Wright is a treasonous one, and Christian has the message that would prove it. On Earth, Anna does her best to pin the moral compass on the world leader, but is bested by Aaron Wright, who convinces Gillis to take out 5 Martian first strike platforms, you know, for peace. The plan backfires, no pun intended, and the Martians get off a nuke killing 2 million people in South America, which reminded me of Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that was a lot of stuff that happened. But one of the biggest moments in these two episodes is seeing two of our storylines intersect, or some of our characters intersect, in the same way that we see Miller team up with the Rossi crew or meet the Rossi crew at the end of season one. We get to see Bobby and Christian, who are already kind of this cool, unexpected, maybe team up, you know, end up on the Rossi. And how was that for everyone? Because it's, you know, with Miller, even though there's some, like, antagonism, I feel like it takes a little... It's maybe even more rough between Bobby and Christian and the Rossi crew in this scenario. Mm-hmm.
Any environment where... A new environment where Christian could swear, I'm okay with. I'm always happy to see her talk filthy anywhere.
Oh, yeah. There's just some... You go from the cool team up of Christian and Bobby to, like... Christian, like, Amos showing Christian how to use the, like, gravity boots. There's, like, so many, like, it's just fun, like, to see these characters interact.
Well, it's so fish out of water, and the Rossi is such kind of a working man's crew, and then you've got, like, the second most important person in the solar system, essentially, is just hanging around, and a Marine, so.
Yeah, it's like the Queen has come to visit.
Exactly, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. It's also cool to get little details like the fact that Christian has met Holden's mom or one of his parents and, you know, has seen her more recently than Holden has as well.
Mm-hmm. Substantially sooner. Yeah.
Yeah. Which adds this interesting dynamic to their conversation and Christian's efforts to get Holden to do what she wants. And I think it says a lot about where Holden is right now, that even that tactic doesn't seem to really have much of an effect on him.
No, it doesn't, which is something.
And it's actually Prax who's the one who breaks the tie on the vote on whether they should even help Bobby and Christian, which is pretty crazy.
I mean, I understand why in TV terms that happens, but it didn't ring entirely true. Like, after he's been going on about his daughter, rightfully so, for the longest time, all of a sudden he's like, no, let's do this other thing.
Yeah, because I wish we had seen him kind of make that decision more, or have that...
Or even just have a hint of it.
Yeah.
Like, they cut to him and he's looking pensive or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they wanted to make it a surprise that Bobby and Christian would be saved. And maybe it was because we had watched the episodes, but I didn't think that they were going to die. And I would have rather... Mm-hmm. I always vote for, like, the choosing characters over maybe the, like, surprising plot twist moment, which is really hard to pull off anyway. So, yeah, I think it would have been... I love those scenes where they're, like, making a decision as a crew. But in terms of his decision, I do think the conversation he has with Amos a little bit later, where he talks about kind of being afraid to find May, is maybe helpful, or maybe an effort to try to explain that decision. Mm-hmm. But it's still a hard sell, because we don't know. I mean, we know kind of what's going on with May, but he doesn't know how much time she has. He doesn't know if she's okay.
Or if alive. Even.
Yeah. Yeah. I think rewatching this, just seeing the this idea of he thought the hybrid might be May, and you don't know that if she's alive or not for the longest time, it doesn't play as well for me on the rewatch, I think.
Yeah, it's a little shaky, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah, I wish if they were going to have him be a voice of... you know, let's look at this proto-molecule man more complexly, it maybe would have just been more interesting to have it be not necessarily because he thinks it might be his daughter, but because mm-hmm. he values life in some way, or I don't know, because, like, all of them obviously value
does.
Life.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can tell he does. He's all about life. He's all about plants, right? So
yeah, he's the plant guy. So who do we think would win in a fight, Amos or Bobby?
My money is on Bobby.
Mine too.
Because she's like trained.
Yeah. I mean, also.
Basically. She's as tough as him and trained. So
we're talking no power armor, right? Like,
yeah.
Just oh, yeah. But with power armor, it's not even a fair fight. Yeah, well, like, he's done.
But even when she doesn't have the power armor, she's just like terrifying.
Yeah. And even Amos is kind of terrifying. Like, when they kind of allude to who would win in a fight, he's kind of like, I'd like to see what would happen. And it is kind of played off as a joke, but I think Amos might actually be like, I wonder what would happen.
Yeah.
I think Amos, he'd hold up well, I think. It's not like he would get his clock cleaned, but I think she'd win.
Yeah.
For sure.
We get this, like, somewhat discordant subplot of Alex getting a message back from his wife that he had previously sent a message kind of checking in and letting them know letting them know he was alive and why he hadn't come home.
I'm no good. Bye.
A very, yeah, pretty pitiful message. And he gets a very, what I would consider very polite message back from his wife that basically is like an F you, but like in the kindest way possible. I feel like she could have been much harsher with him.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame her, honestly.
Yeah. So did you guys think that this fit? How did you think this fit into these episodes or this episode?
I mean, it had to go in there somewhere.
Yeah. I think... I always just, like, I think there are parts of this episode that I really like that with Alex. There are these moments, I think when Alex is doing this emotional labor for the Rossi crew, I really like it. I love the conversation he has with Naomi where he's trying to talk to her about her decision and how he understands it. It just seems to really be in stark contrast with this, his family, his Martian family, that he just is so bad at talking to his wife. And there's plenty of people, you know, who, you know, you have a bad relationship and you're terrible at communicating. Mm-hmm. but you actually have a high emotional intelligence, and maybe that is what the case is with Alex. But
the thing about Alex is I always forget that he's Martian.
Yeah.
Like, I never forget that Naomi's from the belt. I never forget the other two guys are from Earth. But I always forget he's Martian. It's probably because of the Texas drawl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish they did a little bit of a better job exploring or highlighting that part of his character. Or even making that line more explicit between, you know, maybe he feels like he's failed his family on Mars. So that's why he's so committed to his family on the Rossi and keeping it together. And usually I'm not someone who likes too much handholding when it comes to making those kinds of connections like explicit, but in this case I think his character might benefit from it.
Well, there's also just,
I wonder if that's a book thing too. I wonder if the books really flesh him out.
Because it doesn't seem like as much that there's things that define him as Martian. Like you look,
yeah,
and maybe that's just because I think of so much about Mars as Bobby and like, but he, Alex was part of the military, but he was part of the military in this very different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he does make that argument when he's trying to convince Holden to answer Bobby and Christian's message or...
distress call.
Distress call. That he made some sort of commitment to the Martian Marines or military and that he can't turn his back on it. And when we were watching it, I turned to Jen and was like, I don't know, I was kind of thrown by that because I don't think I'd ever really seen him exhibit that sort of loyalty before, but maybe that's not fair or true. I couldn't tell if he was using it as a tactic or if he actually, that was really his, he really, that was the reason why he wanted to answer this distress call. And I,
maybe, yeah.
I think it, we don't, I still don't feel like I know his character well enough to answer questions like that. And I don't know if that's intentional. No. I don't think it is. So,
we're talking about Alex, this is, I do love the special effects. And I mean, he is piloting the ship. When they do that flip move to save Christian and Bobby and like take out the UN ship with torpedoes, that is some good
space maneuvering.
It's some good and probably completely unrealistic space maneuvering.
Oh, yeah. No, totally.
Is that the orbital mechanics required for that are questionable, I'm pretty sure.
Is that the same sequence when Amos and Prax are trying to avoid all of the flying debris? Or is that different?
Yes, which is great. Like, they keep finding new ways to hurt and kill people on this show, and I love it. Like, based on space. Like, space is so dangerous, and they continually, like, they'll be sitting in a bar or something on Tycho, and then just a window will blow out and a bunch of people fly into the vacuum and you're just like, oh yeah, they are in space, which is terrible and deadly.
Yeah, and they make it all seem so mundane, like the fact that it just was because Prax didn't properly lock up this drawer.
So people have to be really anal if they're going to go into space because everything is going to kill you.
Yeah, I already knew I wouldn't survive in space, but this just really...
No, I'd be dead.
My glasses would float off my face and that would be it.
I also know Jen was put off by the fact that Alex could receive a message from his wife, but Christian couldn't send a message to Souther, Admiral Souther.
Which I hadn't thought of until now, but you're absolutely right.
I mean, I guess there's like maybe some level of like, I don't know, like the UN is more monitored or something, but... Or maybe Alex has been waiting to listen to this message, but it just seemed like a weird plot hole to
me. That's actually the only thing that I think would make sense. But the way that the scene plays out, it seems like the message comes up. Unless it's like, you know, he hit snooze a few times, you know.
Yeah, or you went on Wi-Fi, like you went past a Wi-Fi hotspot and it just all of a sudden updates your email. Yeah. So, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
So one of the other character combinations I wanted to talk about before we moved on to a different plot line was getting to see Christian and Naomi have a conversation, because they're both such cool. They're two, basically maybe my two of my favorite characters for sure. Maybe my two favorite characters. And they're both such like strong, intense people. And it makes total sense that they wouldn't get along, but I still love their conversation and the fact that they are so honest with one another. What did you guys think of that moment, of that scene?
They seem kind of like, even though they're not equals, they feel like they are.
Mm.
Yeah, which says a lot about Naomi.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like significantly younger, has significantly less actual political power.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, none, really.
Yeah,
I guess
none.
A little
really
bit,
none.
She's in tight with Fred Johnson, but...
Exactly, but really none.
yeah, basically.
And, yeah... She just tells her what she thinks.
And there's a similar moment where when Bobby first comes on board, Naomi also like stands up to her in a way that Bobby's just so she's such a presence, like a physical presence. Like she's so large. And they do a good job of staging that scene because you feel like Bobby could just take on any of them and win, and possibly all of them. But Naomi still is just like, no, we're not doing this thing you want us to do. This is what's happening. Yeah, she's just the best.
Well, no argument here, yeah.
So meanwhile, in the Agatha King plotline, we check in with a lot of what were previously supporting characters, which I think is kind of a cool... thing to recognize. We have Katyar being picked up by a ship that's run by Admiral Souther, who we haven't seen for a while. And then we get Admiral Wynn, who comes in as well. Admiral Wynn?
Yeah.
Admiral.
He's like the fleet. He's in charge of the whole fleet.
Yeah. And it had me thinking about comparing the storyline to something like the Arbogast, where there's a lot of, you know, minor characters, but we actually haven't seen them in any real like way over a period of time. And for me, the Agatha King stuff worked better, and perhaps that was one of the reasons. But how did you guys feel about this storyline?
It's interesting watching Katyar when he's killing him, because he looks like he kind of regrets it, but he's still going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was watching that, I was like, I forgot that he just kills that man in cold blood. That derpy man. it definitely makes me look at his character differently. And I do agree that it seems like he genuinely is upset that he has to do it. And later there's that moment where he kind of volunteers the unnecessary information that Theo was a good man.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that was pretty harsh. Pretty... I don't know. I think villainous is too strong a word, but...
I mean, you also get the sense, too, that, like, this isn't the first time he's done this.
Had to kill a Theo.
Yeah. He, like...
Yeah. Theo did look like he was going to be, you know, mincemeat at some point.
Yeah.
He made it longer than he should have.
Yeah. Frankly, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
That's what's so sad about it, though. He made it so far. What was it like for you both seeing Admiral Souther again? Did you have feelings about that?
I love Admiral Souther. I don't know why I love him so much, but I mean,
because he puts up with a lot.
He does. Yeah, and I genuinely remember in the first season when he resigns, maybe in the early second season when he resigns from, I guess what is now Admiral Wynn's job, and just being really blown away by that as like as plotline. You don't often see a character moment to be like, well, I object with this, and as a political figure, I'm just
relinquishing power
because mm-hmm. I'm not gonna win. I don't know, I liked that. So
yeah, but he still believes enough that he is like, I still want to be a part of this organization.
He's not like
And as I said, or as we mentioned in the synopsis, he definitely has like a Bill Adama thing going on the Agatha King and its shoddy electrical system, which I appreciated. And I think maybe also...
Well,
As one should. And I think also gave me an immediate fondness for the whole situation. Even that guy who's like his minion, who's just like, oh yeah, totally. I get your code. You're super complex.
With his two underlings that, like, are so loyal to him. Which is interesting because he can't have been serving on the ship for that long. I mean,
maybe. I need a timeline.
I get very confused about how long has passed, but not that long. But he does. He has that Bill Adama level of, like, everyone's like, well, of course, he's the admiral. So, of course, we'll undermine this other admiral. It's very like, what is it? Admiral Kane or whatever her name is. Now we're getting deep.
Oh, the one from Razor?
Yeah.
I told Chip yes. We were only going to make Battlestar Galactica references.
Good. So I approve of this.
He said we were playing right
first season on my box set rewatch. So yeah.
Nice. He said we were playing right into your hands.
Well, not really. You're the one starting it. How are you playing into my hands?
I know.
I agree.
We I think this is our. We all have this hand.
Yeah. Exactly. We're just not furthering his Babylon 5 agenda.
Exactly.
So meanwhile on Earth. This is a very hard storyline for me to watch because if you've seen it before, you know that Aaron Wright's plan is not going to work. I mean, it's going to work in the sense that he gets Gillis to go to war, but not in the sense that he avoids 2 million Earthers dying in a nuclear blast that could have been prevented or was potentially unnecessary. But Elizabeth Mitchell is there. So that makes it a highly watchable storyline. What are our thoughts about this character, about Anna?
I just like that she's a decent human being, unlike almost anybody else. Like, untainted by violence and compromise.
She's a decent human
being. For now, anyway.
Yeah, she's a decent human being, but she also doesn't put up with nonsense either. She's not like...
That's true, yes.
I really like... The moment when Gillis calls her in and is like, I need you to sell my war. And you see her calculate, like, all right, how much can I get? Like, if I'm going to do this, like, I don't gain anything necessarily from not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe she regrets this later. Who's to say? But she is just like, I need funding for all my projects. For the next year.
I mean, that's reasonable.
Like, it's she's not just this morally righteous person. She also is strategic. And I think she really fulfills a similar, like, there's, you're just like, who, like, is it left in this administration to, like, counter Aaron Wright?
That's true.
It's mind-boggling that all of these other people that are in the room are just like, well, we'll just let him rant about how we have to go to war. Because you've kind of, I mean, obviously Christian is gone. Souther's gone. I don't know who any of these other people are, but they have nothing useful to say as a counterpoint.
She's also someone who knows what battles she should fight. It's always interesting when she chooses to, how much she chooses to say. Because she isn't someone yet to suffer fools, but... You know, at the end of the second episode, when Aaron Wright comes in to kind of, like, brag in a weird way, you know, she doesn't say anything because she's horrified at what's happened. And I think she also understands that to say anything in that moment would probably be more about ego or wanting to hurt Aaron Wright, maybe, than, which are very relatable goals. Yeah, but wouldn't actually change anything because he's not going to listen. She pegs Aaron Wright as someone who is not going to, you know, be open to hearing other opinions or views or perspectives, mm-hmm. like, right from the get-go. I'd like to talk about Gillis. Because he... You know, he's someone who's been around for a long time, kind of in the background to a certain extent. And this situation has gotten to a point where he has to start making some decisions. And he's not shown to be, you know, someone like Aaron Wright, who has very selfish
motivations.
I guess he does have selfish motivations in the sense that he cares about his legacy a lot. But you also don't, you know, you don't get the impression that he doesn't care about the people he's meant to be, you know, serving. So I do think he's a pretty complex depiction of a leader, while also being a pretty incompetent depiction of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
How did he?
I mean, Aaron Wright's just a snake. He should figure this out.
Yeah. How did he get this position? Like, he just seems so dull. Like, what is the election process for choosing him?
He's like the Gerald Ford of this,
yeah,
this whole thing.
Yeah, he really just seems like, oh, maybe, yeah, the previous, he, you know, inherited the role from, you know.
He paid his dues, or whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, you know, someone had to resign, he got it. I don't know, like.
He's like Al Gore, except Al Gore didn't win. But kind of
He is an Al Gore, yeah. Oh. Yeah, he just.
We did touch a little bit on Aaron Wright, Aaron Wright's motivations, but, you know, there's this great line that Christian has where she's, you know, she finds out that there's all these ships in, like, space in a way that she immediately knows that war has happened. And she says, looks like Aaron Wright finally got his war. And we know that Aaron Wright wants to cover his tracks. We know that he wants a protomolecule for Earth. Does he want war? Because I was a little unclear on his specific motivations in these episodes.
I was unclear about the whole attack thing. I was like they're at war and they're railgunning these guys, I guess. I don't know what the hell's going on, actually. It's for the second time running. I still don't know what's going on.
Yeah. He really seems like he dials it up to 11 here. And I'm not totally sure if he's like, yeah, I don't understand it either.
Yeah, like, is it coming from a place of also just continuing to be fueled in some way by his anger at Christian, or like his sense of betrayal that he has towards her? And you know, throughout this whole process, he keeps getting, like, these texts from his minions just being like, we're trying to kill her. It hasn't happened yet. So he's obviously distracted by that. And also, like, that seems to be his main objective. And I wonder if in some... I don't think he's so, like, evil that he would, you know, just start a war to cover him trying to kill Christian. But, Yeah, I'm just, I wish that had been a little clearer in these episodes, or a little clearer.
I'm never sure if, you know, his deal, whatever his deal is with Mao, which seems to have really fallen apart at this point, if he was going to profit in some way from, like, this protomolecule. Well, I guess.
Yeah, what is he getting out of this? Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it doesn't seem like he's going to get any money from Mao at this point, right? Like.
Well, Mao doesn't have any money.
Yeah, exactly. It's all frozen. Like,
yeah, so this is all just bitter rich guy stuff.
Yeah.
Classic politics.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, well, what was the point of the thing we started? I just like the part at the end of Burn After Reading. What happened? I'm not even sure.
It's like, it's pretty impressive that even though I'm not totally sure what some of these motivations are, I am really engaged by the political maneuvering that happens in these episodes. And even though I still don't feel like we've seen a lot of Earth, really, we get to see the protesters in this first episode, which is another glimpse at Earth culture that I think is pretty rare on the show. But when, you know, 2 million people die, it, you know, obviously that sounds horrifying, but I still don't really have a connection to Earth in this show specifically. I have connection to some of the Earthers, but we just really see this, like, highest level, the government. We don't get to see a lot of the people of Earth.
That's true. Like, we still don't, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah.
We're not going to in the next season, I'm sure. Well, I don't know that for a fact, but.
Yeah. I'm also still confused with how nuclear weapons work in this Earth. Because, like, that seems like a large enough nuclear bomb that's going to not just... There's 2 million people in the impact zone, but nuclear fallout,
there's
isn't
wind.
That still a thing? Like, I mean, yeah. Who knows? I guess they have anti-radiation meds now, I guess. I don't know.
And anti-bullet meds, apparently.
So elsewhere, on Io, We have the very cheery children experimentation storyline happening. And an episode that is surprisingly somewhat dedicated to Mal having some sort of moral nuance, I guess. And the fact...
Ish.
Yeah, like very light. Compared to Strickland, which again, is not very difficult.
True.
But he does seem to be surprised. Mal does seem to be surprised that Strickland is experimenting on children. Which, you know, feels like bad management. You know, this is a pretty important project. It seems to be the biggest thing he has going on. And I know it has really spiraled out of control in a lot of ways, but it does seem somewhat odd that he's first learning about Strickland experimenting on children in these episodes.
Because he's not above, because obviously tons of kids died on Eris. So it's not like, oh, I'm not gonna do this. But I don't know.
Well, my whole thing is that why is it Mal is the only one? Like, all these scientists don't seem to have any problem whatsoever with experimenting on kids.
Yeah.
You'd think somebody there would go, eh, maybe this is not such a great idea.
Yeah, do they all get the like magnet empathy treatment?
Maybe, yeah. Because, maybe that's possible.
Maybe.
Like, they don't ever say it, but they all seem pretty non-empathetic, so.
Yeah.
And we do get that moment where Mao sees the quick shot of Julie's, like, proto-molecule body on one of the video screens, which is like, Strickland, gotta pay attention to this stuff. I mean, I guess that's not true. Strickland is not caring about upsetting anyone, even his boss. But that does seem to influence how he almost immediately begins to form this relationship with May. And that, you know, she also has that very, unbeknownst to her, cutting line, are you someone's dad? Like, you're a good kid. that definitely seems to be... Again, you know, it seems to be an influence on his actions. And he does at a point in these episodes say, hey, maybe we should stop experimenting on children.
What an idea.
A hard moral line there, really.
Yeah, that you've already set up this entire facility in the middle of nowhere secretly, knowing that it's bad. And then you're like, well, but maybe we shouldn't because I feel bad now.
Yeah, it does also seem partially informed by his belief that maybe the experiments aren't going anywhere. So we shouldn't leave that.
Well, I mean, all they're doing is creating monsters. Yeah. So what the hell's the point?
Yeah. Does anyone have anything else to say before we move on to the spoiler zone?
No, I'm pretty spoilerific.
Yeah.
Okay, we are now entering the spoiler zone. For those who haven't watched past episode 3 of season 3 and do not wish to be spoiled for the rest of season 3, it's time to board the Razorback and race your way out of here. We hope you'll come back next week for our discussion of Reload and Triple Point. You can subscribe wherever good podcasts are found and follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter. For everyone else, let's dive in. So we get to see some of a lot of the, continuation of the Naomi-Rossi emotional fallout in these episodes. And Naomi is starting to consider and be strongly suggested by Holden or from Holden that she maybe leave the Rossi. And it's interesting, you know, knowing that she will and that she'll eventually come back. And for me watching this, I felt like that departure feels kind of necessary. I don't know. What were you guys thinking?
I think so. Yeah. Like, everybody is still cheesed off at her, and not without reason, too. Also, one of my favorite things is when she code switches as a belter, which she does later in the season,
Yeah. And...
Because she's really good at the belter, even though she doesn't do it normally. She's really good at, like, basically being as good at it as Drummer is.
And I do really love having her meet up with Drummer and, you know, all of the other belters and, you know, Diogo, you know, everyone. Like, that it really feels like that's the moment where kind of that whole Belter politics and them becoming kind of this power, having her be part of that, I really love that storyline.
Yeah, like as much as it feels necessary in terms of Naomi's relationship with the other members of the Rossi for her to maybe leave for a little bit, it also feels like just for Naomi, important for her to, yeah, spend some time amongst the Belters and contribute to that cause, at least for a little while. Yeah, and I agree. Some of the stuff that comes in that is really cool. In some ways, I wish that she got to spend more time with them because it feels relatively short.
I also think Holden doesn't seem at all ready to, like, you know, Alex is obviously like, sure, I forgive you. It's fine.
Do you want some extra lasagna?
Yeah. But Holden is very much feels betrayed by her and not, there's no opening there. You know, and Amos is like, I found new people to follow, so that's over. Like, until Holden forgives you, I'm certainly not forgiving you. Seems to be Amos's, like, yeah. So it makes sense that, yeah, she kind of does have to leave. Otherwise, we would have had to have a really long storyline of them all fighting. And
that wouldn't have been fun.
It would have been boring. No.
One other thing I like about the and this is a few episodes back, I think now, the drummer and Naomi relationship is how they seem to really get along, but then at one point, drummer's like, bitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah! What's going on? Like, what's the deal with these two?
Yeah, it's when she finds out she had the protomolecule the whole time.
Yeah. It's so good. I would love to see more stuff. Even, like cut out Alex's family messages and, like, let's see what Naomi's video messages with drummer look like.
Yeah. There you go.
And as good as Christian is at swearing, that is a well thrown out beat right there. Yeah. I have to say, from drummer.
I don't want to harp too much on this point, but knowing that Alex's family still doesn't really play too much of a role moving forward, I just continue to be like, why? Why are we spending narrative space on this?
This is the last of it though, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, there's like a mention of the fact. Might be in the season 4 premiere.
Okay, don't say anything.
Oh, never mind then.
But it really is like they're not in it.
Yeah.
It might be actually earlier. I thought in season 3 later when Bobby goes back to Mars, doesn't she like check in with Alex's family or something?
I don't remember.
Totally. I remember them sending messages. I remember Bobby and Alex having a conversation. I don't remember what the content of the conversation was.
Regardless, no, nor do I. It's not a prominent part of the storyline. No. I will stop picking on Alex for now. But I'm really torn because we get these little like nuggets, these treasures, these references to Amos's past and like how he became Amos. And part of me really wants to get to see more of that in some way or have it come back into his present in some way. And part of me does enjoy how these little things are, just kind of like dropped into other moments. Would you guys like to see more of Amos's storyline or backstory?
When he refers to the fact that he used to wear pumps because he hasn't always worked in space.
Yeah, that was very, I was like, what? Was he like in a brothel? He grew up in a brothel, right? Yeah. So maybe he did wear pumps.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's my assumption.
I think it's better just to hint at this stuff than to have actual, sometimes the Star Wars prequels being a perfect example, you don't need to explain everything.
Yeah, it'd be hard to justify it in terms of why it's relevant to anything more than his character in the present.
Yeah. And if it's done just as a gag, then why bother, right? So
yeah. I think, it'd be interesting if someone like from his past showed up. But like he says, no one leaves Baltimore. Yeah. So like, who would that be?
And the thing is, there's no questioning that because we all know people who lived in small towns and never left or whatever city you're from.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if it's like, whatever, it seems like this is one of the real economically depressed part of Earth. It's especially that.
I mean, it almost sounds like it's Fallout 4 in there. Yeah. From the way he makes it sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we have very little insight into what Earth is like outside of what, like Montana or this random farm.
But there's a protest, so there's that.
The protest that in the episode. Random farm. And apparently
I loved how they had holographic protest signs. That was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Gemma's like, wow, there's a lot of people at this protest.
I was also like, there would be way more riot cops, not enough cops.
You know what I did watching that protest? I was like, guys, I know these people are cut and pasted. So I started looking for the same guy doing the same thing. Like, I didn't spot it, but I guarantee that's how they did it. They just kind of cut and pasted a crowd and threw it together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a Where's Waldo situation.
Oh, that's what they do all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just cut fast enough, you're not going to notice it.
What a character introduction, though, for Anna.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's very cool. And the episode, Assured Destruction, ends with her, again, with Aaron Wright, like, kind of just boasting to Anna. And it feels like he's won. But knowing that she's just going to continue to, you know, it's not something that she necessarily values, but she's going to hold on to her power in a way that Aaron Wright is not.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited for more Anna.
I am too.
I was like, when we saw her family, though, I was like, oh man.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about The Expanse. You just got this regular old lesbian family, and that's that.
Yeah.
There's nothing to it. It's just they don't make a thing out of it. It's just a thing.
Yeah, you know? I know. I am sad, though, because, like, she... Not sad. I was actually talking about this when we were watching it, that she, when she goes out on the ship in season, I guess later in the season, she has to leave her family behind. And I like that she is a character who's shown to be, like, very nurturing and compassionate and empathetic, but... And also be, like, a mother and a partner. But, like, that's not what her character is about. It's not about her being a mother or a partner. It's about her using those traits in other ways, like in politics and, like exploration, I guess. And I think that's really cool because you just so often see those things explored in, like, domestic spaces and domestic storylines, which I love. But it's cool to see that represented in other ways and, you know, shown as valuable in other spheres of existence.
And everyone in this show has to be a deadbeat, kind of, just based on whether unless you're from the belt or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's true. You have, like, you also have, like, Christian, who at this point her family
on the moon
is, like, never hasn't been seen since, you know, for a long time, which, you know, she's on the run. It's not like, but
yeah,
it, yeah, it's so
what does that do to her husband? Like, her husband's maybe separated, but is he dealing with a lot of nonsense too? Like,
yeah, I know. I guess that's maybe why she sends him to the moon. She knows the things are going to go bad. I don't know.
Go to our villa on the moon. Stay there.
That must be nice, having a villa on the moon.
I mean, hopefully she has another spy that we never see that she hires to, like, protect her husband and her grandchildren.
Yeah. How many spies do you think she has?
I bet she's got a few. She at least has access to a few.
Yeah.
I think she has 37.
Sure. Let's say 37.
All right, well.
Did anyone have anything else to...
I feel like we were going to start pitching, like, spy spin-offs.
No, no more spy shows. We already hit our sitcom quota last week.
Yep. Oh, this isn't a sitcom.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us on A Legitimate Salvage. We'll be back next week to discuss Reload and Triple Point. Until then, the cheese ain't real. But the love that went into it is.